Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wild Horse and Burro Radio, an educational outreach program of Wild Horse Freedom Federation. You're welcome to call in during the second half hour of the show if you'd like to ask our guests any questions tonight. Tonight our guests are, I'm a little rusty, but my phone actually got disconnected right when I called, so I'm a little flustered. Our guests tonight are Elaine Nash, the founder and director of Fleet of Angels, a nonprofit organization that offers crisis management and transportation assistance during equine-related emergencies, as well as other services. And we also have Palomino Armstrong, who founded Chili Pepper Miracle Mustang, and which specializes in critically ill neonatal, sick, and or injured foals. And as you will learn tonight, Palomino and her husband, Matt, do a lot more than that. Basically, our show, last October 2016, the Dewey County and Zibach County state attorneys impounded the horses and burros at ISPMB. And tonight, Elaine's going to give us a little bit of the background of what happened right after that. And Palomino will tell us a little bit about the ground operations. Welcome to the show, Palomino and Elaine.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Elaine, tell us a little bit about what happened after this impoundment in 2016. Can you give us a little bit of background on what happened after that?
Well, I hadn't really heard anything about what was happening up there other than that there was a lot of concern that donations had dried up to some great extent, I think, and that some of the horses might be in trouble. And that was just, you know, echoing around our network of equine advocacy. One evening, I got a phone call from Steve Aberle, who's the state's attorney of South Dakota, and he spent about 2.5 hours on the phone with me telling me what was going on up there, explaining that they had impounded all of ISPMB's horses, that there was a court order in place that required ISPMB director and board of directors to put together funds to show that they could provide funding, feed for the horses for 18 months, however many horses they kept. They were asked to do windbreaks and take care of some special needs horses. A lot of horses were in real trouble without having enough food or the kind of care that they needed up in very harsh country up there. The court order allowed for one-third of the herd of horses on the property to be adopted out to help reduce the size of the herd that she had while they were trying to get these guidelines in place. I was asked to bring with True Fleet of Angels to organize and manage a large national campaign to get that third adopted and into good homes. Based on the numbers that they had at the time, that was supposed to be 270 horses. And so I started, I told them that I would help with that.
A third of the herd would be 270.
So I started looking around, doing some research. I read somewhere on Facebook that Palomino had gone up there and picked up a load of special needs horses and taken them back to Nevada. And I thought, well, here's a person who maybe has some insight about what's going on up there. And so I called Palomino, and we had a conversation or two about the situation. And I asked Palomino if she would be willing, under certain circumstances, to go back up there and be our grounds team manager for this effort. And she agreed. She may be sorry now that she said she would.
But we hear all the details.
She went to hell and back during that operation up there. But she went up. Another thing that happened that's important is that I was discussing with someone the fact that we needed photographs of the horses to show people so they'd have some idea what the horses that we were trying to adopt out looked like. And that person contacted Barbara Rasmussen in Arizona, and Barbara contacted a photographer friend of hers, and the two of them drove up to South Dakota and spent a week at the facility taking pictures of the horses.
To facilitate the adoptions. To facilitate the adoptions, correct?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so sort of out of nothing comes a little bit of an organized, the blossom of an organized effort of Palomino being up there doing the grounds team management, which means the gathering of the horses from the 600 and something acres. They were divided into four different pastures, and the horses all had to be collected in over time. The mares and stallions had to be separated from each other, which is a huge, huge ordeal and effort, especially considering the fact that there was almost no infrastructure up there to work with. And then also, when Barbara Rasmussen and her photographer friend, Janet Neal, got back to Arizona within a few days, Barbara turned around and went back up there and stayed with Karen Sussman in her house and helped facilitate adoptions and became our adoption manager. So the first two people that Fleet of Angels had up there were Barbara Rasmussen and then Palomino, who, you know, had already been there once, but went back on our behalf to do that additional work. So a lot happened really fast in early October.
So basically, the county attorneys got in touch with you.
Right.
The California state attorneys got in touch with you. So
right.
Fleet of Angels
somehow
got involved.
He knew about Fleet of Angels and called and asked us to handle that part. At that time, that's all we knew would happen, was that we would be asked to get 270 horses adopted into good homes as soon as we could.
How many horses were there actually when you know,
well,
what was the count?
We were told
different numbers.
ISPMB told the sheriff's office apparently that there were 600 and something horses. Then when the sheriff's went out and stood in the back of pickup trucks and drove around and did sort of a cursory count of the horses, and the state vets were involved in that too, I believe, they came up with 810 horses. So that's the number that the courts used, was 810. That's where that 270 number came from, and that's what was considered to be the number. Well, go forward in time a little bit, and the horses ended up being all turned over to us. And when we compared the number of horses with our records, you know, verifiable records of the horses that had been adopted out through our campaign, and added to that the number of horses that we actually, that actually were turned over to us, it turned out to be 907 horses.
Okay. What do you mean turned over to you, because you said the sheriff's asked you to help. So what happened farther down the line that horses were turned over to Fleet of Angels?
The adoption campaign started in October and ran until into December. And in December, the two counties, her property, the ISPMB property is in two counties. So the two sheriffs worked together. They and the state attorney and whomever else was involved on the legal end of things decided they were going to send all of the rest of the horses to auction on December 20th because they had a lien on those horses against the bill, the hay bill, that had been accumulated from October until December.
Yeah, I remember that.
You know, that's like the absolute worst case scenario. So what we did is I got in touch with Netta DeMaio of Return to Freedom organization in California, And she has this terrific network of organizations that she works with her Wild Horse Sanctuary. And she was instrumental in helping put together organizations who put up the funds to pay off the counties $150,000 by the 20th of December to stop that auction.
Wow.
And what we had to do at the same time was agree to take over all the costs of funding the needs and feed for the horses until the court made a decision on what would happen with the rest of the horses. We didn't know whether they'd be returned to ISPB or what. We agreed when asked to become the safety net for those horses so that if they were taken away from ISPMB, we were willing to continue our program and take full responsibility for the horses and try to get them all into good homes. But we didn't play any part in any of the legal issues. We just were there on standby if needed.
So they wouldn't go to slaughter. Yeah.
So they wouldn't go to slaughter. We had to keep those horses from going to slaughter. So we got the $150,000 together. That was paid to the counties. The auction was canceled. We made a lot of kill buyers mad because they already had trucks at the auction facility and were already staying in the same hotel that we ended up staying in when we went up there after they were turned over to us. You know, everything was set for those horses to be sold by the pound to kill buyers. And we stopped them.
Well, yeah. Well, so Palomino, it was a little cold and nippy while you were up there running operations, right? Can you tell us a little bit about all that, what you did?
Yeah, when we started this, it was like Elaine said, there had been, you know, stuff on the internet about what was happening, and then it kind of disappeared. And so I had called Karen before the sheriff went back with the state vets, and I asked her, you know, and she was pretty much like, everything's fine, but we need some help. So we went and got our first batch of horses, and we were supposed to get, I think, 7, and she only let us take 3, and it's over 1,000 miles each way, so, or I think it's 2,000 or something. Anyway, so we had gotten up there, and we took the first load, and we went back and got a second load. And when Elaine called me, we were on our third and final trip back. And I remember talking to Elaine when she asked us if we'd help, and it was like, yeah, and Barbara and all of us, we were not going to be there past Thanksgiving. We were going to have it all wrapped up and be done. So God kind of laughed at us because it did not happen like that. And what was really hard is that dealing with Karen has no malice towards her horses. She loves her horses, but she's like an anorexic person that looks in the mirror and sees somebody fat when they're not, you know. And so it was really hard because having to be respectful and I didn't want to hurt her any more than she was already hurt, but the situation was pretty horrific. And, you know, and then we had Elaine and Barbara did, yeah, I'm a horse girl. I'd rather do what I did, what they did. It's like, no, even though we were in blizzards. But, you know, they had all these adopters ready, and we were limited in the horses we could pull in. We couldn't pull in the babies. We couldn't pull in the special needs. But the reason Karen let me stay there and on the property is because I had called her because when the sheriff was going to go with the state vet, he asked me to be there for critical care. And I called her and I told her, I said, I don't want to blindside you. You know, we will be there with the sheriff, and then we'll just pick up the horses, because she didn't want us to pick up the horses there. She wanted us to pick them up somewhere else. So anyway, we kind of had an established thing, but we still were very much at the mercy of who she would let us adopt out. And like I said, they had all these transporters, they had all these adopters, and I would have people sitting out there, and I could not, and we had just 50, 60 babies, and I couldn't pull them in. So it was really frustrating. And then the weather got really bad, and I'm not really good with minus 40 degrees, and it was literally minus 40 blizzards. And where we were working, the snow piles were so deep that they just walk over the fence in and out. So it was pretty, it was awful.
Yeah, I can't even imagine that kind of cold. I told Marty when the temperature plummets to 50, I like got my snow jacket on here. So, well, so low, you know, these were wild horses, they hadn't been handled much. So how was it loading them in trailers and all? I mean, I don't think people quite understand. They know you were in cold and snow, but these were very difficult conditions because trying to load horses, I'm assuming it took longer than it might normally take. Or...
Well, when we got there, the second time we picked up a load of horses, she had four panels. We always run with panels on our trailers because we do wild horses. So to give people an idea, when you drove in, there was probably, I don't know, 170 or more Virginia range horses on a little 2.5-acre lot. And they had been there for 16 years. So every stallion was there. In the wild, when a bachelor, a young man comes into adulthood, they form their bachelor band and they leave. Well, they can't do it there. So there is just 24 hours of fighting. It just is horrific. It makes you it's extremely dangerous to sort in there, and we didn't have enough panels. So Lane got some people to donate some panels, and we had a tiny area where we could kind of get some in. But it was like, you know, trying to sail the ocean in a canoe. It was just ridiculous, and it was so dangerous. And luckily, that's what we've been doing for like 15 years, so we know how to do it. And my biggest thing being there to help was the fact that I didn't want any horses hurt. And then, of course, I didn't want people hurt either. But my biggest thing was to keep the horses safe. And we did not hurt any horses or have any people injuries in the whole time we stored all those horses.
Wow.
Now, we
did
have horrific things happen where the blind horses would run into, not when we were out there, but, you know, you come the next morning and a blind horse had panicked and ran into the barbed wire and a T-post and gutted itself. We had horses that, you know, in the fighting that where their legs were broken. And I was there for probably 2 weeks almost by myself, and because Matt was driving and hauling horses. And it was after Barb had been there for a few months and she had taken a break. And, I mean, I would call Elaine and just be in tears. I'm like, I have to go home because, I mean, I was waking up every day to dead horses. They were freezing. The babies would freeze to death. The horses would freeze to death. And, like, for 7 or 8 days, every single day we'd have at least one or two dead horses on the ground from freezing to death because there's no shelter. There's no windbreaks. There's no, and I mean, I don't know how many people are familiar with minus 40 below, but it's insane. And
yeah,
for a baby to be laying on the ground.
May I interject something?
Sure.
I think it's hard for people to imagine what the weather really was like up there during the time that Palomino and the rest of our ground team were out doing all of this. It was snowing almost around the clock all day, every day for weeks. And the wind would blow so hard that even when it wasn't snowing, visibility was almost zero from snow blowing sideways. And it was so cold that you couldn't walk outside and stay outside for 2 minutes without risk of frostbite if you didn't have every part of you covered up. So everybody, these guys had on layer upon layer of warm clothes and Carhartt overalls and face masks and gloves and boots and everything else, but it was still cold. There was no way for them to be out in this and be warm while they were doing what they were doing. And the horses weren't used to being, you know, being asked to do anything. And so I know from what I was told at the time, the horses, you don't go out and just sort of herd these horses together like you think of horses or cattle being herded around, and you open up a gate and kind of gather them up and slowly move them. They all mosey through the gate. That's the opposite of what happened. The horses were very reluctant to go into these panel pens that had to be set up because they weren't used to them. They didn't know what they were. They knew they were being trapped. These Palomino and these guys could only get a few horses at a time sometimes. And then those would try to get back to their herd mates, or the mares would leave foals behind to try to get back to the stallions. Horses would jump these panel pens that we're used to holding any animal we put in them were like nothing to these horses. They jump like kangaroos when under pressure or stress, or they want to get back to their herd. And so, you know, think about there were times that the snowdrift, even after I got up, I went up in January and stayed until we left with the last horse. And I saw snowdrifts 20 feet high. And
wow.
We bought thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars worth of panels for these guys to use. And those panels got so covered in snow, standing, you know, in a fence configuration. They were so deep in snow that the snow had to melt over a foot to even be able to see the tops of those panels again. And
uh-huh.
they were still out there gathering in these horses to get them food and to safety and adopted and, you know, do what we were there for. So, I mean, it really, the conditions there were nothing short of horrific.
And then the transportation, so Matt had to drive on these horrible roads that were probably snowed over.
Yeah. Matt was a transporter who transported some of the horses, but there were a lot of others who also came and would, you know, sometimes they had to wait and wait and wait while Palomino and her group were trying to get horses sorted out. Someone would come and say, you know, I'm here to pick up Jane Jones's two Virginia Range mares. Well, great. That doesn't sound that hard unless you're there and see how hard it is to sort out two Virginia Range mares and get them into a trailer.
Yeah. It's on snow and ice, yeah.
So there were sometimes
wow.
trailers lined up. Some of the transporters were awesome. They would get out and go help and pitch in, realizing that this is all a volunteer effort and that this is for a cause, not a business, and they would help and work to get the horses loaded. Others would sit in their trucks and post on Facebook about how it was taking so long and complain about how long they were having to wait to pick up their horses, you know. And during all of that, these guys were out there in the middle of that. I can't say enough about what they did up there and how diligent Palomino was about doing that job.
And doing it correctly.
Great, yeah. It had to be, you know, it took everybody because I cannot do what they do, and very few people are trained. Well, we're just lucky. I shouldn't say that. Maybe I don't believe that, but we are some of the very few that have been trained, you know, years and years and years doing wild horses. But some of the most interesting parts is we were told that there was a blind horse in the catnip herd. And there's like 67 horses out there. So we go out there and we're sorting, and Matt gets plowed into the fence. And we realize there's more than one blind horse. And we came to realize that you sat up ahead of time and you watched who was in the pen, because there was probably, 20 or 30 blind horses. And they're used to running. They know the area, so they will do full gallops. And then you put pins out there and you just absolutely freak them out and you stress them out so badly. And what we did was so, people don't understand. I mean, you see a stallion fighting or you see pictures of it and it's so amazing and it's so intense. But you watch them and you see these horses going with big chunks out of them, and they're bleeding and there's scars and they're blind and they're kicked in the head and their mouths are deformed, and because they don't have a way to get away from each other, and they fight every single day, 24 hours. It's horrible. And then, like she was saying,
I thought all the horses were running on over huge areas of land. They had been penned up for a while.
Areas.
907 horses on 600 and something acres of flat, basically dirt.
But like the Virginia Range, they've been there for 16 years or a study, and they were in probably about 2.5 acres. It was like a feedlot. I've never seen a feedlot that full. And
yes,
it
was like the size of a rodeo arena, for example. And this whole herd of horses had lived in it for all these years.
Oh, wow.
And we saw legs get broken while we were there because the stallions were fighting. I mean, it was just, and then there was four different groups, I believe. And, you know, like the blind stallion we brought home, he's huge. He's like I can't think of the name right now. But anyway, he's a huge, huge, huge horse. And he grew up blind there, and he's been fighting his whole life. He fought the whole time we were there. 24/7. He was just, you know, in these horrific stallion fights, screaming and bloody and all this stuff. And then he did manage to walk over to the fence and say hi to me, so I take him home, which I did. But, you know, these horses, it's just so unnatural. And for the bachelors not to be able to leave, they just get, I mean, they literally get beat to death sometimes because there's nowhere for them to go. And the inbreeding have to be phenomenal. And like I said, there was at least 20 or 30 of the catnip that were blind. And we had one little Palomino out there, and he just spun and spun and spun and spun in circles because we stressed him out so bad because we put the panels there. And if people have been looking at Facebook, there's a picture of Frosty. He's a black stallion, and he's absolutely covered in snow. And he literally would have froze to death because I put panels there, and he didn't know where to go.
Yeah, you know, I have that picture on the radio promo, so I'm sure everybody knows what you're talking about, the black stallion. Yeah,
yeah, and he was so sweet, and he was a loner, you know, and it's like just a heartbreak. You can't even describe it. You cannot – I mean, the nightmares are still every night, and it's like – I don't know. I mean, there's no words to describe what it was really like, you know. And when you have mares leaving brand new babies to go back to their stallions, you know, it's like. And I guess I was talking to Netta.
Why were they doing that?
Netta DeMaio and I were talking, and she said that she thought that probably because the stallions were their, you know, the protection and the herd and the survival. Whereas babies, you know, if something's wrong with a baby, they just leave it behind or they kill it. So, but, you know, and there was a lot of old injuries there that needed to be taken care of. And it was just, you know, and at the same time, you know, everyone's hating Karen, and she had no intention of ever hurting her horses. And she just, you know, she can't comprehend what really happened. I mean, it's heartbreaking because she was in tears all the time. And I mean, and yet these horses were suffering horribly. So it was just, it was a really hard situation. But I mean, with everybody working together, it's absolutely amazing what was accomplished.
Well, the good news is that over 700 horses have been adopted and are in good homes now. So, you know.
So you have a couple hundred more that need to be adopted. How many more need to be adopted at this point?
Oh, I have trouble keeping up with the numbers, but it's like between 175, 185 horses as of today, I think, are left out of the 907. So, you know, we have people, you know, there's a lot that's happened between the storms that we just talked about and the work Palomino was doing and what's going on right now. We found a fantastic place. You want me to stop?
Well, no, go ahead. I just wanted to remind people, we've already gone through half an hour, and if people want to call in with any questions. But first I wanted to ask you, you started to mention a terrific place, and I wanted, before we have people call in with questions, I kind of wanted you to talk about all the people and groups that were involved in this effort. You know, before we get on other tracks, because I really want to, this was a huge cooperative effort by many good people. So I'd kind of like to hear about that or let people know.
Our slogan at Fleet of Angels is teamwork works. And the whole core mission of Fleet of Angels is to bring together capable people who all care about the same thing, which is helping save at-risk horses and working together toward that end. So this is really an ultimate example of how well that can work. And, you know, believe me, there have been hills and valleys, lots of struggles, lots of tough times, lots of, you know, the funding is a huge issue. The weather was a huge issue. The personal dynamics were issues with ISPMB and other things. But by working together, you know, this is the largest rescue, the rescue of the largest group of horses known in the history of the country. And we're close to the finish line on this now. We have a lot, you know, comparatively we're near the finish line, but there's still a lot of horses to get into home. The, some of the people who this could not be happening without are, and we've already mentioned her, Netta DeMaio, I can't say enough about what she's done in the background to help with the funding and a lot of other aspects of this to make this a success. One of the things that she did through her organization, Return to Freedom, is they adopted the entire herd of Gila, the Gila herd of horses from Arizona. And they are now, those horses are now, most of them, are on a fantastic sanctuary in Northern California that's absolutely the picture of what you'd like to imagine wild horses having access to is what she set up for those horses. And some of them haven't been taken there yet because every single horse is having its DNA tested to see who has the genetic viability and who's the strongest to carry on the herd. And it's going to be a very, very carefully, scientifically managed herd that's allowed to breed and be preserved, but not just, you know, any stallion, any mare all the time until the herd's out of control and this happens again. So, you know, Netta's just been huge in this. Shirley Puga of the National Equine Resource Network has been a huge help. She put together a program that's covered the cost of the gelding for all of the stallions. And there were as many stallions as mares in these horses when we brought the 312 horses to Colorado to the new adoption hub where they are now. 165 of those horses were stallions, and they all had to be gelded. So Shirley deserves huge credit for that, because just imagine, what do you do with that many stallions if you can't afford to geld them? So, you know, huge appreciation to her for that. Victoria McCullough has helped us so much. She's a friend of mine and has answered my request for help in so many ways. She helped fund the panels that we needed. She stepped up in all kinds of ways through this whole thing. And we couldn't have done it without her. This is, like I said, it's the rescue of the most horses in the history of the country, as far as anyone knows. Guess what? That also makes it the most expensive, you know? So without people who have resources and have access to other people with resources and organizations with resources, we would be dead in our tracks before we got started. ASPCA,
and then,
ASPCA and HSUS both stepped forward to help us fund that buyout of the hay, the lien on the hay. They both helped us. Both of those organizations have helped with this.
Because you had to come up with $150,000. Yeah, for the $150,000.
Right. Wow. Yeah. That's right. And ASPCA also covered the cost of getting Coggins tests on each horse, or most of the cost for us in South Dakota. We had to get to bring the horses to Colorado. We had to have Coggins tests and microchipping done on every single horse before we brought 10 semi truckloads of horses to Colorado. And ASPCA paid $50 of the $60 on every horse that we had to do the Coggins testing on. And then, you know, just doing the microchip, the Avid microchip company provided us with 500 microchip kits, but it still cost $20 a piece just to have those implanted. And so, you know, when you start doing the math on all of that, it gets, it's expensive. We also
really quickly, I'm going to jump in and tell people, if they, our listeners, if they, because we're kind of, we've only got about 20 something minutes left. If any of our listeners would like to call in and ask Palanino or Elaine any questions, area code 917 388 4520, then press 1. As soon as you hear the automated voice, just press 1, and our producer will get you on air.
I hope Barbara Rasmussen's listening. I hope she'll call in because she really needs to be a part of this. She's been a part of this. She was feet on the ground, away from home for more days than any of the rest of us. And has been working in the background on adoptions on this the whole time.
And my apologies to her for not including her in on this show. I just, you know, I try and just have two guests on at a time if I can, but it was not to exclude her in any way. And especially I felt really bad after you told me how hard she lived for so long.
She
hope she calls in too.
She's a warrior in a different way. She's a warrior on a keyboard.
But she has to put up with the people, and that's the hard part. No offense, guys, but, you know. I also wanted to mention the Wild Horse Alliance.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Palomino. Somebody's calling in. Go ahead with your thought.
Okay, the Wild Horse Alliance, they raised a lot of money, and I know that, like, Love Wild Horses is an organization. They donated 25 tons of hay, and there's a lot of people that went to the Alliance and donated money, so, you know, for hay and stuff like that. And they were kind of behind the scenes quiet, but they, you know, it's
did a lot of work.
The people that have been behind
Jatara was, Jatara was very concerned about getting hay there and did a lot of fundraising. I think we have a caller. Marty, someone on the line?
Yes.
Oh, Marty lost.
Barbara.
Hi, Barbara. Oh, good.
Hi.
I just got a Skype from
Hi,
Marty.
Hi,
Palomino. Audio, so.
Hey, how are you?
So this is Barbara Rasmussen. Elaine, I'll let you introduce Barbara.
Well, Barbara Rasmussen is the queen of equine adoption applications. In order for someone to be able to adopt horses through this campaign, they have to go online and fill out a digital online application and submit it so that we know who they are and where they are and what they have to offer the horse, what their experience is, what their plans for the horses are, what their corrals, their shelters, their watering system, what they feed, all kinds of things. And Barbara's job in this is to take each of those applications and review them and then research each person to make sure they are who they say they are. I tell people, Barbara, by the time Barbara's through going through an application, she's going to know what your grades were in junior high.
Well, that's good.
But, you know, we want to be really careful that the horses go to good homes. We know that it's not going to be a 100% success, that every horse is going to go to a home where it's going to get the care we hope for it. But we ask everyone to adopt at least two horses so that no horse will have to leave without a family member or herd mate. In most cases, we're able to do that, not always.
Oh, good.
And and Barbara is who is our detective on this. So bless her heart, and thank you, Barbara.
Thank you, Elaine. Yeah. And thank you, Palomino. It was an honor to be included in this rescue. There's so many players behind the scene, though, that really helped me. I belong to several groups on Facebook. And these ladies, I just had to ask a question, do you know this person or this person? And they really helped me. We're so against kill buyers and horse slaughter, that none of these horses were going to go to a kill buyer or their dealers or their minions, as we call them.
So
it was a process. But Elaine is the true hero in this whole adoption. She worked since October. On this, and her dedication is beyond, over the top. It's amazing to have been part of this and to continue to be part of it.
Yeah, there's still horses we need to get adopted. So, at some point pretty soon want to talk about that.
Well, thank you.
Are you handling those, Barbara, are you handling those applications for the horses that currently need to be adopted?
Yes, I'm still working on the adoptions from home. I had to leave Colorado to come home because of family.
Could you tell our listeners, if our listeners are interested in adopting any of these remaining horses, Is there a phone number they should call or a website? Can you tell them how to go?
They can go to the Fleet of Angels website. And
that's fleetofangels.org. Yeah.
Yes. Or they can call me, and I can walk them through the process. And my phone number is 928-978-3417.
Great.
Get your junior high grades, Betty.
Yeah. It was an experience, like Palomino and Elaine both said, the experience of being there and witnessing the suffering of the horses was life-changing. There's no other way to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't
even imagine.
Well, we call them the Hallelujah horses now because when they leave to go home in these trailers that people bring to pick them up and take them to their new lives, we say Hallelujah. and we really mean it because we saw what their lives were before.
Mm-hmm.
And their life, you know, is so much better now. Every one of the horses in Colorado and in their new adoptive homes, they're so just night and day difference. I see pictures of the adopters they share with me, and the horses are amazing. They just have come around. People are training them to be in the Extreme Mustang Makeover. It's just amazing.
Wow. Well, didn't Black Hills Wild Horse Sanctuary house some temporarily, or do they have any horses there? Or I know they helped at least put them
They did some babies in the beginning. They held some babies in the beginning and helped them get to where they needed to go.
Good.
They would have liked to have helped more than they were able to, but they had a lot of things going on at their own facility. They were
everybody can
capacity.
Only do what
they
fire. Yeah. And
so
everybody can only do what they can do, but everybody tried to help a little bit, even if that's all they could do was help a little bit, because every little bit helps and something that huge.
Absolutely. We appreciate all the donations, whether it was a bale of hay, a bag of senior feed, $10, $5. We were so appreciative of any and all help, and we still are.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Go ahead.
Oh, you brought up a good point about everyone can do what they can do, and there's a lot of horses that are still left, and there's a lot of people that cannot take on to. And we've been doing this for about 15 years, and we have horses come in alone all the time, and they buddy up so well. We just got one from Delta, Utah yesterday, and he's already buddied up to a new friend so fast. And so as this winds down to prevent horses getting euthanized, there's a lot of people that could take one horse that have other companion animals. And because we've been doing this a long time, we have experienced, and we know a lot of other people who have. Sometimes if you have an adopter take two wild horses, both horses fail or suffer because they may not have money to have a trainer do both of them or the time. And you see every year, like an example is the orphan foals from Yakima. There's always yearlings because they force them to take two horses and one of them doesn't get trained or they both don't get trained, so they end up in the slaughter yard. So as it comes down closer, it's something to consider because, I mean, like I said, we've been doing this for 15 years. We see it all the time, and they buddy up really quickly with a new one. So if somebody has companion animals at home and can't afford to take on two or do a good job training them or whatever, they can talk to Barb and Elaine about it because, you know, there's certain situations, like they said, it's not always buddies. And, you know,
and they're all having
to should people, if they're going to, if they wanted to come pick up just one horse, you know, I know that the horses might be traumatized, the wild horses, being in a trailer by themselves going somewhere. Should they bring a companion animal to
always,
load with?
We recommend that. We have some people coming in the next couple of days, in fact, to pick up one horse that is being adopted by itself, and they're bringing a nice, calm, gentle, stable horse that they have to be a trailer companion for that horse, and then that horse will be able to buddy up with it and be with it at home while things are getting while it's getting sort of nested into its new world before it's even really introduced to all the other horses that these folks have. So, you know, there are always exceptions to, you know, any kind of situation. People, when they apply, they have every opportunity on the application form to write about their own situation and how many horses they're interested in and how they would manage them and so forth. So, you know, we're looking for good adopters who are going to give these horses a good home.
I have a couple of questions for Palomino. Palomino, so if someone wants to adopt one of these wild horses or two, are there special food requirements? That's one question. And the other question just slipped my mind, so go ahead and answer that one. Maybe the other question will pop back in.
Well, so many people
feed
different ways. Wild horses should not, I mean, most Mustangs, the general rule of thumb is most Mustangs do not need alfalfa. It's horrible for them. It kind of puts them like they're on crack. You know, obviously, if one is starved, it would could use a special diet, and I would suggest talking to the vet about it. As far as facilities, you should never have barbed wire with wild horses. They can panic, and they will just slice themselves to pieces, so that's always something to avoid. And, you know, like with the blind horses, you know, people were talking, oh, well, I can just take a blind horse in its brand and put it out in my pasture, and you really can't do that. Unless you're prepared to shoot it if something happens, and that sounds cold, but what happens is these horses panic, and we had a situation, and we're pretty prepared. You know, we have the high fences and all that stuff, and we have range cattle, and they came and they spooked the wild stallions we brought home, and they knocked half the barn down. And luckily nobody was hurt, but, I mean, it's really hard to plan for every single thing, but if we would have low fences and they panicked, they would run, and I know Barb and was there with us, and I know we saw firsthand what happened when they go through barbed wire. You know, they get T-posted, their guts come out, you have to shoot them. I mean, it's horrible. So if somebody wants to adopt them and they can't bring them in, and see, that's one of Karen's biggest problems is when she set this up, she never, ever had a way to bring in an injured horse. So if you adopt a wild horse, you can gentle them if you're patient. That's all wonderful. And you don't put them in the same pen. You don't take two horses home and put them in the same pen. You put them next to each other. And that's what most people that work with wild horses a lot do, because if you put them in the same pen and you go in, they feed off each other and they'll build into a frenzy. And it's just so much smarter to have them right next to each other. They can still groom each other. They can still bond and be together. But people that
and
do
get
wild
used
horses
to each other.
Yeah, they don't put them in the same pen because that's like the worst thing you could do. And so then, you know, if you're going to have blind ones, you have to have a place. So if they run and panic, they're not going to flip over a fence or get on a T-post. And, you know, if you have trees out there and they panic and they run into a tree, if you can't catch that horse, you better be able to go out and shoot it and put it out of its misery. And that sounds cold, but it's just one of the things you have to really be able to deal with if you're going to take on something like that. You know, we want every single horse to get rescued, but, you know, you don't want it to get in a worse situation.
Yeah. The other question I had. Go ahead.
Also,
go ahead,
I just wanted to interject that we've had some people adopt some of the blind horses. Nancy Turner at This Old Horse Rescue adopted seven blind stallions. And then we talked her into taking a couple more that we wanted her to have. And she has a very, very successful program. She has the horses in the right kind of corrals and handles them the right way. And, you know, they're not being trained to behave like domestic horses. They're left to be wild horses. But they're in an environment that works for them, and they're very
safe
happy,
for them.
Very healthy, very safe horses. We have someone else who adopted three blind horses and one horse with vision in one eye. And two of those blind horses are just Siamese twins almost. And then the horse with the one eye leads the whole group of them around to feed and water and so forth. And those horses are out in a large pasture, and they're thriving. They're doing great. So it is possible to be an adopter of a special needs horse, but you do have to just be responsible about it.
And that's
we have
the one
a lot of both. available right now.
Yes.
We have blind horses available, and we have a lot of horses that aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And we put a video up.
Go ahead.
We put a video up of Shadow, our blind horse, with playing with the mini. And like Elaine said, if you do it right,
it was so
they're
cute.
Amazing. You can show them. People show them. They do dressage. They jump, like, those 6-foot jumps and stuff.
Blind
horses
do dressage?
Amazing.
Wow.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I've seen it.
They're
insane.
Amazing. So that's the one benefit of having the facility in Colorado as well. You can watch the horses in their, you know, and figure out who their buddies are, who they depend on. And when people come to adopt, you can show what horse is, you know, belongs to this one. This is his seeing eye buddy, where in South Dakota, it was pretty hard to separate them because there were so many horses in such, bad conditions. But Elaine found the facility in Colorado, and that was a godsend to have them there, because we can watch, well, I can't anymore, but you can watch the horses, you know who their buddies are and how they function, the blind horse with its seeing eye buddy. And it is amazing to watch them.
So
how they interact.
The question I had, and I don't know if Palomino wants to answer this or Elaine. So say someone has horses, but they've never had to gentle or train wild horses. Do any of these groups offer like advice or tips, or do you guys have like a printout you give people, or like, so if they were interested, but just a little hesitant because they've never had a wild horse, but maybe they're thinking about it. Is there anyone from any of these groups that could talk to them, take the time to talk to them and give them a little advice on, you know,
we do
or,
it all the time.
Or
we
is
have
there...
people come stay here. We have people come stay and we show them and walk them through, you know, the gelling and stuff. I mean, or they can call. But, yeah, we have people come. Like, a lot of times when we adopt out babies, we'll have them come and just stay for a week or whatever, and they do it. Because it's not hard. If you have a safe place, the wild horses, and sometimes they're easier than domestics if they haven't been handled poorly, you know, because you have a clean slate. But, yeah, I mean, anybody can call us, and we're happy to talk to them. And you know, and I'm sure Elaine probably has people like that, too.
Yeah, I know we took in 4 of the Gilas, brought them to Arizona, and the older one, he had some health issues, and we lost him. But the other 3 are amazing. We can brush them. The one little guy that we call Diego, he lifts his feet up now for us, and he's in your pocket. You go out there, and he just follows you around. He photo bombs every picture. And they
I'm laughing because Carol Walker's horses, when I visited Carol, they did the same thing, and they were like, looked like they were laughing. Carol and I were posing, and the horses looked like they're laughing behind us. It's one of my favorite pictures ever. So funny when I saw it.
But the thing that people need to realize is they're still a wild horse. They may come up and they may want to, you know, put their head on your shoulder or anything, but I never let my guard down around them because I don't want to get bit. It hurts.
And one thing people really need to remember about those horses is they were never asked to do anything. Most of them have very little fear, and they have no respect. So that makes them more dangerous.
They have no respect. Yes.
Yep, than a wild horse. It's way worse because, you know, Karen walked around and pat him and all that stuff. So, but then you ask them to do something, and they will trample you. They will go right. But then again, I had a stallion coming right through me, and he went over my head instead, and he could have easily just took me out. So it's not like they're mean or hateful, but they don't have the fear, and they don't have the respect. So you have to be a little bit more careful with them.
Yeah,
so,
because they look at humans as the person who feeds them. That's the only human interaction they've had.
I have to say something.
Okay.
A lot of these horses are perfectly willing to be your partner unless you give them a reason not to. We
Absolutely.
Have people who are adopting these horses, and 2 days later, they're leading the horse around. They have their arms around the horse's neck posing for pictures. These horses are not the head for the hills when they see a human, horses like the BLM horses. these horses are like
they
blank
want
canvases.
Somebody's horse.
And some of the bigger, older horses are sort of fit the description that's just been given. But a lot of the younger horses are very sweet. They come up and pick your pocket, and they are happy to have scratches, and they turn into nice domestic horses faster than you can imagine. So there's
yeah.
no guarantee
so,
that's going to happen, but I certainly
but
don't
they,
want people to get the idea that these horses are all man-eaters.
No, they're not.
Oh, no,
they're not.
They're just
people have to have respect for them and understand that they're not. They haven't been given the right answer so far, but no, I don't think there's anyone there that can't be trained and turned into a wonderful partner.
I know one of the volunteer, one of the workers there in Colorado, really bonded with one of the older Sheldons that was blind, and she would braid his mane, and it was amazing to watch how gentle
yeah.
he was.
Yeah, it's great.
And
I want to be sure
beautiful.
That we. I'm sorry. Yeah, they are.
Well, we only have
Debbie,
a few minutes left.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make sure. So, all of you listening, if you're interested in adopting, or if you can donate some money, because these funds are still needed for hay and everything, you can go to fleetofangels.org. And Elaine Nash has fleetofangels.org, and Palomino has chilipepper.org. And there's also the Wild Horse and Burro Sanctuary Alliance. They have a Facebook page, I believe, or a website. So, but I suggest, you know, Elaine, fleetofangels.org, chilipepper.org, and then, you know, they'll get you in touch with whoever you need to, Barbara, if you want to fill out an application, and they'll help you along with the whole process.
We have a whole bunch of horses that need homes. We need to get these horses into homes fast. Our costs are almost $8,000 a week just to feed the horses, cover the cost of the facility where we have them, and to pay for the manpower for the people who do the feeding and watering. And,
yeah.
you know, we're in Fort Collins, Colorado. We have an absolutely gorgeous new adoption facility that we have arranged for this single campaign. And I just want people to know that you need to apply. You are welcome then to come out and see the horses. We help you choose horses. We help you load them. The vet, the brand inspector come and do the paperwork. We have a beautiful shoot facility set up, so it's easy to get the horse microchip scanned.
We're down to
just
our last
come
minute.
And see it.
So, okay, great. Thank you, Elaine.
Oh, also,
thank you, Palomino.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Barbara, for everything you've done.
You're
and for
very welcome.
Calling in tonight. And I'd like to tell our listeners that, and thank Marty Oakley, our producer. And TS Radio has two other shows, Voices Carry for Animals on Tuesday nights and Whistleblowers on Thursday nights. So tune into those radio shows, too, and check them out. They're archived on the PPJ Gazette, Marty's site. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening tonight. And everyone who contributed to this giant team effort, a big thank you. For all the work you did under a lot of duress with weather conditions and everything else. So thank you very much.
And thank you,
go
Debbie. Ahead. You're awesome. Thank you for doing
yes.
this show.
Oh,
it's
sure.
awesome. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.